It's the 15th of January 2016, and this is Sami Shah right here behind the microphone, but not behind the steering wheel. I don't think I'm going to be behind the steering wheel and doing one of these for a long time now. Hi, everyone. Yep, this is Sami Says. Welcome back to my podcast, which has been AWOL for many a month now. I think that I recorded the last one maybe early November. I don't know. It's definitely before I left for Melbourne. I remember it was in my last week or two before leaving for Melbourne, and then I didn't. And then I lost a lot of listeners since then, but I've also gained a few people on my fan page. I don't know who will be listening to this. So let's start again. Let's start from the beginning. Let's reintroduce ourselves to each other. Hi, my name is Sami Shah. It's actually pronounced Sami, but my friends and family call me Sami, so you can call me Sami as well. Of course, I feel we're close to each other like that. We're getting to know one another. And this is my podcast, Sami Says, or Sami Says, how I often call it. I never know. I'm inconsistent with the pronunciation of myself. But yeah, it is what it is. And that's actually the alternate title for the podcast is It Is What It Is, because that's a phrase you're going to be hearing a lot over the course of this podcast. Who am I? I am a stand-up comedian and writer from Karachi, Pakistan. Karachi, the biggest city in Pakistan. I'm from there. I was born there. I grew up there. I did comedy there for years. I worked there in news. I worked in advertising. I did all kinds of things. And then I moved to Australia. Almost 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, I moved to Australia. And because the immigration department in Australia has a wonderful sense of humor, I was required to spend the last 3 years or so in a small country town in rural Western Australia. For those of you who don't know, Western Australia is basically, it's humongous. It's the largest state in Australia. It's almost half the size of Australia just by itself. And there's a small country town called Northam, of maybe 7,000 people, mostly farmers and industrialists and stuff living there. And that's where I lived for 3.5 years. I drove a car to Perth every day for 2 hours. And I used to do comedy, stand-up comedy over there. And I have a book out called I, Migrant. I have another one coming out soon. We'll talk about that in a bit. And yeah, I'm a stand-up comedian and a writer, and I did this for years. And then my, visa came through, my time was up, I didn't have to live in Northam anymore. So in November of 2015, 2-3 months ago, basically 2.5 months ago, I packed up and moved to Melbourne. The big smoke, as everyone calls it, and I still have no idea why they call it that, because it's not particularly smoky here at all. But yeah, they call it the big smoke, and here I am now. Pardon, living in Melbourne, settling in as it is. And yeah, it's been a long time since I did my last podcast. I used to record these while driving from, Northam to Perth, which is the closest city. For my comedy gigs, it'd be like a 2-hour drive, an hour and 40 minute long drive, and it'd be really boring. So, normally I listen to podcasts or audiobooks. But I decided, I'm wasting a lot of time. I could be more productive. I'll start recording a podcast. So I did that every week for many episodes. And that's how the podcast came out. And the thing is, it created routine, right? It created a system where every week I knew I had to record a podcast, and sitting in the car for that drive forced me to then record that podcast. It became a system and a routine. And once you break the routine, even a little bit, it becomes very difficult to get back into it. I remember when I went to London last year for a couple of weeks, and my routine broke. It took me a while to get back into the podcasting again, and I'm having the same trouble now. I kept thinking, all right, time to re-record an episode of the podcast after I said bye to you guys from Perth, from Northam, and I thought, now I'm in Melbourne, I'll record it. And for the first 2-3 weeks, I was like, oh, I'm not driving around. I need to drive around. I need to be in a car to record the podcast. It's so inherent to the format of the podcast. But that I didn't get a chance ever. I was never alone in the car. I always had someone with me, like Ania or someone. So my daughter, and we were moving things and settling into a house and everything. And so I didn't record it then. And then life got in the way. And then things get in the way. And then you keep thinking, tomorrow I'll record it. And tomorrow I'll record it. And tomorrow, as they say, never does come. And as a result, here we are. It's the 15th of January, and I'm finally recording it right now. And honestly, God, even now, I kind of had to force myself into doing it. And the only reason I'm doing it is because I'm avoiding some other work. So this has become a sort of procrastination. But I'm, whatever works into getting me to do this again, because I missed it. I missed talking to you guys and hearing back from you guys and voicing the opinions and having a place for, to kind of go on my wonderful rants that we all love and adore so much. But here's the podcast. I'll catch you guys up on what's been happening in the last 2 3 months. It's been weird. It's been an interesting, slightly difficult, quite difficult time actually in some ways and wonderful in other ways. I don't want to make it sound depressing and wretched and all that, but yeah, there's been some good stuff, some bad stuff, and I try to share everything with all of you. And it's only fair if I want to from next week, once I now that the podcast is starting up again and I hope to get back on a regular schedule, if I want to do that, then and I want to talk about other issues and topics, then I need to catch you guys up. So I'll do that this episode, and next week can get back to my regular nonsense that I used to do back in the day, which was, by the way, for those of you who are wondering what this is, it's not just a stream of consciousness, sort of a ramble. I'm not clever or funny enough to pull that off on a podcast. I think like someone like Bill Burr can maybe do that, but not me. This is more, I try to focus in on a topic every week, or every alternate week, basically. And I already have a few lined up that I'd really like to get into, in the next few weeks. So we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Right now, of course, the biggest change is the fact that I'm not driving. That is a huge challenge for me. I miss the driving. I actually do. I miss the driving. It's weird. I miss having those hours of the day when I was forced up for up to 4 hours a day almost to just sit in a car all by myself, alone with my thoughts and things, and process information, process ideas, process opinions, and all of those. I don't have that now. There's always something going on. There's always distractions happening, So as a result, I just don't get that kind of solitary time anymore, the solace to kind of ruminate and reflect. And that's going to affect the podcast, I'm sure, because the podcast kind of lived, was based around that idea. Right now, for example, I'm just walking around the house. It's nighttime, it's 10:22 p.m. right now, as I record. And, my daughter's fast asleep, and I'm just kind of walking around the house and trying, recording this podcast. And it's one of those things where I feel I've never been comfortable doing one thing at one time, physically. I was always one of those people who was, when I was on the phone with my friends, I was also reading a book. If I'm reading a book, I'm also watching TV. If I'm watching TV, I'm also playing the guitar. I need to be doing, that's why driving and podcasting work perfect for me, or driving and listening to an audiobook or something like that, because I need to be engaged in something else at the same time. Right now, to just be standing here or just kind of, cutting a path through the living room or short circuit around my sofa, it doesn't work for me. It's extremely, my hands are itchy right now. I feel like I should be doing something else as well. So I don't know, maybe I'll figure out something to do. Who knows? Maybe I just masturbate while talking to you guys. That's what I can do just to kind of make this more interesting, is have a nice wank while recording a podcast. I don't know if there's any podcasts recorded while people are wanking. I'm sure there are. I mean, there's podcasts on everything. You can find podcasts about people wanking, I'm sure. But I don't think anyone has ever recorded a podcast regularly, episode after episode, mid-wank. And yeah, that could be a nice challenge for me. It would help me stretch out the wanks a little bit. No pun intended there. But yeah, I don't, see, this is why I don't do stream of consciousness, because I make myself giggle like an idiot and then we all lose out. But yes, it's been a fascinating, an interesting time getting back to the podcast and the time spent since I recorded the last one. We packed up everything. We sold mostly everything, actually. That's not true. We didn't pack up everything. We sold mostly everything, and that was a huge mistake in retrospect. And we packed everything up, and we just moved, and we had a lot of the things we were left with. We had them shipped across here. If I have to think back on the biggest mistake I made in leaving, when leaving Northam, not in leaving Northam, not leaving Northam was not a mistake, but when leaving Northam, my biggest mistake would have to be underestimating the cost. And it's stupid because I've done this once before. When we moved from Pakistan to Australia, I had, we took all our savings, all the money we had, which wasn't much. It just wasn't much. We just aren't. I never earned well enough to have humongous savings, and nor have I inherited any wealth that way. So it just, what meager savings we had, we kind of put it all together, And we came here and we were done inside of the first month. 90% of that was spent off, and you just have, that 10% left as an emergency cash. For the first year in Australia, I just had enough money in my savings account for us to buy return tickets if things broke bad. That was my goal, is always have enough money to buy return tickets if things broke bad. And then you slowly kind of build up from there. And it took 3 years, 3.5 years, and I built up some savings and things. And then for the move across, we kind of dipped into those savings again, and we came to Perth, and we came to Melbourne, and the flight over, and then having the car shipped over, and then bringing some furniture over, and then paying a deposit on the house and that we're going to rent, and then paying all the other things, and then buying new furniture because we, like idiots, had sold off most of our furniture. The end result was, at the age of 37, for the first time probably since college, I had, a couple hundred dollars in the bank account. That was it. Because there were paychecks that were due, there was payments that was owed, and all of those were going to come in. But when you work freelance and stuff, a lot of that stuff does take time to come in. And some of them were overdue because people just screw up their own paperwork, and none of it came through for a while. And there was for a while, it was the scariest it's been in a while. You hope to find yourself at the age of 37 not in that situation. But it was, I did. I had maybe $300 in the bank account. And then for 1 week, it was like that. So for 1 week, it was like nobody move, nobody breathe, nobody fart, nobody sneeze, nobody move, because this all costs money. And then the next week the payments came through and I was fine again. And I was back to slowly building, building a life with money again. I think I've come to terms with the idea that I'm never going to be rich. I'm not, it's because only because it's never been an aspiration of mine. I think those who people who become rich aspire to be rich, and it kind of works out for them. If that's your dream and you follow that, it will happen. But it isn't mine. It hasn't been. And I think that's always been a problem for me, because I then don't factor money or wealth into the work I do. I end up working for far less than I should be charging, because I'd much rather do the work than earn the money, I think. And I earn, and it's a silly idea because I'm only asking to be paid. I should be asking to be paid commensurate to the work and experience I bring, and blah blah blah, and rules of trade and how that system works. But I know an economy works, but yeah, it's just one of those things where every time I get offered a project, I undersell myself just so that I can do the project because I enjoy doing it. And as a result, I just, yeah, I've never had. And I think as long as I'm, it's one of those things. I have no interest in being rich. I just want to be comfortable. And my level of comfort isn't high. I'm not a diva. I don't need, Mercedes or anything like that. I'm perfectly fine with secondhand Toyota Corolla as long as it gets me from A to B. I don't care. I don't like fancy cars. I don't like big televisions. I think all I really need is a computer and a laptop and things like that, and school, and I think money for my kids' school and money for food. I think food is where I spend the most on. And so, but even then, despite all of that, it was a little humbling to have that kind of financial hit, and then slowly kind of build up from there. And still not back to the comfort level that I was even in Northam, which is a weird thing to say, that I'm living in Melbourne, I'm earning less than when I was living in Northam. But it is, I'm in a big city, and I'm trying to reestablish myself over here now after having built my career up over there. So, and you think, oh, but it's Australia, it's still the same country. How much of a difference is it? It is a significant amount of difference. I walked in with some goodwill, which I'm hoping not to squander, in that the comedy clubs, some of the comedians have heard of me, some of the bookers have heard of me, and they let me perform here. But the comedy clubs here have no money in them. They don't pay at all. They're all free clubs, or they pay $50 or so on and so forth. And so you find alternate routes to income. Most of the comedians I've met here have day jobs, which is something that, I'd like to do. If I don't mind doing a day job, I have no issues with that. I'm not lazy like that. And God knows I'm working more being self-employed. It's just I've spent so long not having one. I want the right one if I get it. So now there's one or two I'm pursuing, mainly with the ABC, and hopefully things will work out there. But in the meantime, I'm doing a lot of freelance projects. I've got a documentary going for the ABC, and I've got another project and things like that. So yeah, it's all happening. Don't worry about it. I won't starve. If I starve, I'll set up a Patreon. That was something I was thinking of, by the way, like a Patreon or a Kickstarter. Not a Kickstarter, but a Patreon. I like, for those of you who don't know, it's a lot of podcasts do it now, where you set up a thing where people who like your podcast and want it to continue, they just support you. And they can, that support can come from $1 to $5 or however much they want to spend. And then I give you in return certain prizes and awards and things like that for the amount of money. Like if you give me, you know, $10, then I will do something special for you. If you give $50, I'll do something else for you. And so on and so forth. But yeah, that was the first thing that happened. And then, yeah, it's one of those things where the amount of time and the money, the amount of time I spend on the podcast is something that I want to improve, I want to increase. Now that I'm no longer, restricted to a car, I feel the content, A, will definitely change, but B, I can actually do more with it. I can, A, provide more information about upcoming shows and things like that, and then maybe also record more specialized content and do more experimentational things. And the original goal of this podcast wasn't just to have the voices in my head have an outlet, but actually to, improve my ability to speak into a microphone without saying all the time, because I wanted to get into radio. And I think I've gotten a handle on that to quite a degree. So now I would like to do something more experimental with this. Experimental. I don't know what the word is. How do I not know whether this it's experimental or experimental? Experimental, right? No one says experimental. Anyway. So that was the first thing. We landed in Melbourne, and we stayed with a family friend's mum, or friend's mum, in a Turkish neighborhood called Broad Meadows. A very Turkish-heavy neighborhood. A lot of guys with awesome haircuts and extremely laser-cut, stylized beards that look like they've been stenciled on, doing pinwheels and wheelies and burnouts in their Acura. And so that was the neighborhood we kind of lived in for like 2-3 weeks until we found our own place, and then finally found a place in Brunswick, which is a really nice house that I'm paying way too much rent on in retrospect, but it was just an urgency to get Anya's school started, so we kind of said yes, and I probably shouldn't have signed a one-year lease. But anyway, again, that's too much information. None of your goddamn business. Stick your nose out of it. I'd appreciate it. So that was the first thing that happened. And then the second thing that happened, which kind of hit me hard, was my cousin died. I have I've never really spoken about him as such, and his name is Taha, and or was Taha, and he's my elder cousin. He's 2 years elder than me. And basically, I know you always describe people who die or someone who you're close to as a brother, That's something that we've heard people say, that oh, so and so is like a brother to me. Like, my best friend died, he's like a brother to me. My so and so died, he's like a brother to me. Well, Taha Bhai, Bhai means brother, was my elder brother. He's 2 years older than me. I looked up to him my entire life. He taught me how to smoke. He bought me my first alcoholic drink. He bought me my first pack of condoms. He taught me Led Zeppelin, and he taught me Springsteen. He taught me how to, like, I used to imitate how he dressed. I imitated how he spoke. My sense of humor comes from copying his, because he was the funniest person I knew. My father was never there. My father was on the ship when I was growing up. He was in the Merchant Navy. It's not his fault. I don't blame him, but that was the job he had. And so I kind of lacked a father figure in my life. And for me, Taha Bhai was father figure slash brother, He was my, because in my family, I was the eldest. But it's kind of scary being the eldest. I have two siblings younger than me, but it's kind of scary being the eldest when you don't know what you're doing, because you didn't have that father figure to kind of teach you the ropes. And my mother, did as best she could. My mother taught me to shave, for example. But it's kind of nice to have another male figure in your life. And for me, Taha Bhai was that male figure. I spent my entire childhood just playing with him. We didn't have any other cousins in Karachi. And he was the cousin I spent all my time with. Every second day I'd be over at his house. I idolized him. And then he went to America a year before I did. When I went to America, he basically flew back to Pakistan, and I flew with him Because my parents were like, we're worried about you. We don't want you to go alone. Can you go with Taha? And I was like, absolutely. And so Taha, I went to Taha Bhai. I landed in America. I spent my first 2 weeks in America living with him in his apartment. Then I went to my own college. And every holiday, every summer vacation, winter vacation, spring break, any fall break, anything, Christmas, whatever, I'd just go to Taha Bhai's apartment. I'd spend my time there to the point where I was better friends with his friends for my first 2 years in college than with anyone in my own college. And even though his college was, a half an hour drive away, it was James Madison University in Harrisonburg. Mine was University of Virginia in Charlottesville. And yeah, I was. It's just, I know what I'm describing is boring because it's just me saying how close I am to someone. I'm trying to illustrate how close I am to that person. And we've all got people in our life that we're close to. That's what I'm saying is that think of the person who isn't your blood, like who isn't your actual brother or sister, but the relative in your life or the family friend or friend in your life who might as well be your brother and sister because you're that close to them. You're the influence between the only difference is that they're not born of the same parents, but other than that, they might as well be. That's what Taha Bhai was to me. And then 3 years ago, basically, around a few weeks after I landed in Australia, or a few weeks after I came here, he had a persistent headache, went in for, went to the doctor, had the headache checked out, ended up finding out it was a tumor on the base of his skull. And base, oh, not on the base of his skull, but on his brain. He had a brain tumor. And it was a very malignant one, and it was already in advanced stages. And they gave him a certain amount of time to live. He lived longer than that. The last time I saw him was when I went to Karachi in, what is it, April of 2015? Before my trip to London, I went there to see him. I flew to Karachi just to see him one more time because I knew that would be the last time. We all knew. And I got to see him, and he was still talking, but not much. He couldn't see properly. He couldn't. His memory was shot. He was confined to a wheelchair, and he didn't look like the brother I'd seen my entire life. The brother who, by the way, when I look in the mirror, I see, because he and I look so similar that if I clean shave, if I had to shave off my beard, I look like him so much that it's frightening to me. That's why I haven't actually shaved my beard off in a while now. And I'm sorry for bumming you guys out. I am. It's just I tell you guys everything, so I'm telling you this. I didn't get to see him after that. I saw him. I spent a week with him in Karachi in April or May. Came back here, moved to Melbourne, and a week after I left Karachi and came to Australia, he was diagnosed with the tumor, and a week after I left WA and came to Melbourne, he died. I just got the call from my mom in the morning, and she said he's dead, and that was it. And I couldn't go back for the funeral because we just moved here and had no money left to fly back. And what's the point? By the time I would have gotten there, he would have been in the ground anyway. I wouldn't have been able to be there for the burial. And that was it. And so that one, that's I can't. I don't know. It's been a weird thing where. That hit me hard on a psychological level, on an intellectual level. But the kind of way it should hit me hasn't happened yet. You know, where you fall over crying, where you have that kind of weeping that comes from your gut, that just wrenches itself out of you. I haven't had that. And I think part of it is, a large part of it is just not being there. Being over here in Australia and not being in Karachi, and therefore not being confronted with the absence of him in my life, because him and me in Karachi were so tied together, my memories of him, that once I'm in Karachi and him not being there, that'll be when I probably notice it the most. It feels abstract when you're far away. When you're an immigrant, you're living in a different country, and tragedies happen in your homeland. You appreciate them, I think, on an intellectual level, but on an emotional level, they don't hit you the way they should until much later or until you go back. I remember when Sabine Mehmood, who I've spoken about in this podcast previously, the activist and good friend of mine, was assassinated in Karachi last year, was murdered. And I cried a little bit, and then I didn't cry after that. I'm just one of those people who I have trouble crying anyway. unless you put on a movie. For some reason, you put on any movie, especially on an airplane, and I will weep and bawl my eyes out. I can't even remember. The Descendants with George Clooney. I wept so hard during that movie on the plane that the man next to me got very worried and had to call the air hostess across because he was genuinely concerned about my health. But yeah, that's me on a plane. But on the ground, apparently, I'm made of rock. But yeah, I didn't, like, I remember I cried a little bit for Sabine when I heard, and I was very upset, and I was traumatized, and I was shocked that she was dead and the way she died. And then, I think 3 weeks, no, a week, not even a week, 4 days before I flew out of Northam, I was driving back. My friends and all the comedians in Perth, she threw me a big farewell party. They all came, we all sang karaoke and we did comedy and they all made, you know, they roasted me, and it was a wonderful, wonderful night, and it really, really was a beautiful night for me. And then on the drive back to Northam that night, like, what, 3-4 in the morning, I'm driving home on the Great Eastern Highway in the dark, just my headlights picking the way out. And as I was driving, I started thinking, like, wow, 3.5 years in Northam I've spent, and so much has happened. It's like going over my head about listing the things that have happened, just out of curiosity, you know, what all has happened to me. And the moment I thought of that, and I thought of, and then this happened, that happened, and then Sabine died, and that broke down, and I had to pull over the car to the side of the road, and I just bawled my eyes out, and I was wailing. The way I feel I should have cried when I first heard she died, but I didn't. I think that's when it hit me. And I guess maybe that's how it'll be with Taha Bhai, where the real crying will come later at some point, when I'm not emotionally prepared for that, but I'm emotionally overwrought for something else, and that kind of sneaks in. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, who knows. But yeah, that really messed me up for a while when I came here, and I actually wanted to do a podcast about it. I thought, you know, maybe if I do the podcast, I'll process the emotions and stuff. But I just couldn't get the time. I couldn't be alone ever. I never could. I feel like I'm sneaking off to talk to you guys, but it does feel like that. I just need to be alone, and I just haven't had the time to be alone as such since I came to Melbourne. Every time I'm alone, there's something that's due, some paperwork, some project, some writing thing that's overdue, some freelance assignment that's overdue. And I, even right now, I'm genuinely avoiding work, you know, to talk to you guys. But I figured, you know, I need this sometimes. So that really hit me badly. And then that kind of took its toll. And then after that, you're just settling in, just doing the sillinesses that are involved in setting up a house, and one more trip to IKEA, and I would have blown my own brains out, and buying all the furniture. My second day in this house, this new house in Brunswick, in a trendy area with wonderful neighbors and a really nice neighborhood, I wake up in the morning, I step outside to check the mail, I'm just wearing just track pants, that's it. Just no t-shirt, no shoes, nothing, because I figured I'd just sneak out, check the mail, come back in, because I'm anticipating the arrival of a check that was due from the ABC for a project I'm doing for them. And I check the mail, no check, and then bam, the door shuts behind me. And Anya is at school, no one else is home, the keys are inside the house, and there's no way of getting back inside the house. And I was just locked out. And in Northam, this wouldn't have been a problem. In Northam, I call up the real estate agent. The real estate agent comes across, because it's a small town. There's no one else who got anything to do. And if not, I'll just call someone else and they can help me out. But over here, you call the real estate agent. She's like, look, I'm busy. I'm in a meeting. I can't come across for another 2 hours. So you got to find your own way in. If not, just wait 2 hours. So I have to wait 2 hours. I'm waiting on my front porch in just pajamas. At one point, one of my neighbors comes across and asked, when I asked to use his cell phone, because I didn't have my cell phone either, I asked to use his cell phone to call the real estate agent, which is how I called her in the first place. And I was telling him, I was like, oh, you know, what's funny is I'm from a small country town in Western Australia where there's nothing weird about being trapped outside your house in just track pants with your nipples pointing out, you know, to the whole world. And the guy goes, yeah, you're not there anymore. And I was like, yeah, good point. Fair point. Well illustrated. I shall wear shirts and shoes whenever I leave the house from now on. And then finally, while I'm waiting for the real estate agent, I was like, you know, there's a side window, and just, I wonder whether that's unlocked. And you have to get to the side window. It's a tiny ledge, a wedge of space between the side wall and the fence, and you kind of have to squeeze your way in, and I nudge the window, and the window opens up. And then all my All the practice I got in doing, like leg splits and making myself all bendy thanks to no lights, no lycra, and Shaun T's insanity comes in handy because I squeeze in through a tiny ass window. I mean, just tiny. Like this is some Catwoman shit that I pulled off. And I crawl into the house and I slam the window shut. And I feel triumphant because I'm inside the house, and that's when I realize that the real estate agent is on her way. I have no way of getting back in touch with her. I do get back. Sorry, I call up the real estate agent, and the office says, "Oh, she's left. She's on her way to you now." And now I feel bad because she had to leave a meeting, to come to let me into the house that I have now crawled into, which I should have at least tried getting into before calling her in the first place. So to make it up to her, I took my shirt back off and I took my shoes back off and I went back outside and I shut the door behind me and I locked myself out of the house again, just so that when she came, she could authentically let me inside the house and not feel like she wasted her time. Because that's just the kind of guy I am. Who, I believe the operative word is dumb fuck. So that was like the big thing that I did. Since then, though, I've done a lot of gigs over here. That's been wonderful. Quite a few comedy gigs and stuff, and met some wonderful people. Had nice, had nice gigs even. It's weird because you kind of feel like you're auditioning a lot for the first few weeks, I guess, because it's a new city with new bookers and new people who. New comedians and everything, and I don't want. I'm in Perth. I was at the point where it doesn't matter if I did badly for five gigs. Even everyone knew me. I was reliable, so they knew I could experiment and try new things. If it failed, it failed. They knew I could pull it off whenever I wanted to. Over here, I don't have that kind of cachet, so there's a lot of time. I've been doing just the A grade material on stage, which has been challenging, I suppose, to kind of restrain myself that way. I guess it teaches you discipline, is what it does. So that's been happening. The other big news is this is one of the things that happened is so you guys know I have a book out. It's called I Migrant. It's my autobiography, and by book out I mean it came out a year ago, a year and a half ago now. And good luck finding it in any bookshop because it's not available anywhere anymore. They sold out the main print run, and they haven't bothered re-upping it because the demand and orders weren't there. But it did well for what it was, and I'm quite happy with it. And I kind of hated it initially because I never wanted to write an autobiography. The publisher pushed me into it, and a non-fiction thing. And as time has gone on, I'm kind of prouder of what I achieved with the book. So, but it's out. It's there. It exists in the world. But it's not a book I'm happy with in terms of. It's not the book I wanted to write. I never wanted to be a non-fiction writer or an autobiography writer or a memoirist or whatever. I always wanted to be a fiction writer. For me, genre fiction is where it's at. I always wanted to be a novelist. That was my dream, is to be a novelist. All this, everything else came later. Comedian came later. Journalist came later. Writer came later. Everything came later. Columnist and everything. It was always novelist, and I finally get to do that now. Albeit in a roundabout kind of way. So the book is it's gonna come. I'll give you guys more details as they kind of unfold. I'll just give you a little bit of teaser right now, which is that it is a fiction book. It's going to be horror fantasy fiction set in Karachi, set in Pakistan, featuring jinns and other things in Islamic mythology. It's going to be scary, it's going to be fun, it's going to be creepy, it's going to be entertaining in places. Well, actually, it should always be entertaining. It'll be humorous in places. And it's two books, part one and part two. Part one hopefully comes out by May of this year, part two comes out later this year. However, the way it comes out is it will be entirely ebooks and print on demand. With a new publisher that I'm working with called Fantastica, who only do that. It's just a bunch of guys who really have cool ideas about publishing and want to publish books that aren't just regular boring genre fiction. They want to push it with different different ethnicities, different languages, things like that. And so I really like them, and I like where the books ended up. I've seen a rough draft of the cover. It looks fantastic. I'll give you guys more information as it comes out. Maybe even read an excerpt and things, because I want to audiobook it as well. So we'll have fun with it. That's later. In the meantime, what work am I avoiding right now by talking to you guys? My Perth Fringe show. The Perth Fringe Festival is coming up. As it does every year at this time of year. This is going to be my fourth one, my fourth Perth Fringe Festival, I believe. Yeah, that's right. Fourth. Wow. Four Fringe Festivals. This is my fourth one, and this year I'm doing two shows, not one. The first show is Punching Down, which is from the 27th till I think the 31st of January, and that's it's Punching Down. It's my new hour of stand up that I've been kind of working on for the last year or so, and I'm quite proud of it. I like a lot of the material I've done, written, and I think I can do some exciting things with this. So that's going to be there. I'm gonna take it to the stage. Hopefully, if it goes, I also have really good, opening acts performing with me. Sean Choice on one night, who's a Perth comic, really good. Brody Snook, who's a Perth slash London comic. Beck Charwood, who's a Perth comic, and Craig Quatermain, who's a Perth comic. These guys are all, it's going to open for me every night. That's going to be exciting, and so that's my stand-up comedy show. The other one, Islamopharcist, is the one-man show, slightly more serious in tone, while also being humorous. And it's going to be about my relationship with religion and Islam and how it's perceived in Western countries and so on and so forth. Slightly more complex a show. That's the show that I should be writing right now. Or putting it down on paper at the very least, because I've written it in my head. I know the show, I know the structure of it, I know the things I want to accomplish with it. I know that I want to do a section where I do. I want to do cool things with it. I have great ideas for it, and I've had those for ages, and I haven't put it down because every time I go to put it down, I lose interest. Oh no, I lose not. I get intimidated. I get intimidated, and I think what's happening is that I've kind of hit, just because of the move and the this and the emotional, everything's kind of piled up in my head, and I haven't had a chance to breathe. I haven't had a chance to kind of take in the world around me and exhale it out once. My brain is too cluttered right now. I'm not being able to get the words down in the way I want them. I don't believe in writer's block. I don't think what I have is writer's block. I think what I have is just the writer's overwhelmation, I guess, if I have to massacre a word. I'm just, yeah, there's too much happening in my brain, and I need to clear it out, clear out some space, and get the words down. And it's really difficult because right now we have summer vacations for Anya's school in Australia, and Anya is home every single day for the next 2 weeks. And for the last 3 weeks, and as a result, I don't get much time to breathe or think or to formulate an opinion or a thought without, having to make her food and entertain her and play with her and do all those things. So it's kind of getting a bit frightening because my first night is the 1st of J February. Today is the 15th of January. I have 15 days to write this down. And I know I just need two. That's the thing. I know I just need 2 days because I know the whole thing in my head. I have to put it down on paper for the first night, take a week away from it, or maybe 4 days away from it, edit it. I want to shoot it across from one or two friends, get their feedback, things like that. The whole thing will take maximum 3 to 4 days. But I just need to do that, and I'm not being able to do it. And today, I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to ace it. I'm going to nail it. I put Anya to bed. I chugged a Red Bull at 10 o'clock at night, or 9:30 at night, and I'm talking to you guys instead right now. So that didn't work out as planned. I'm hoping tomorrow now. Who knows? Maybe that's now tomorrow's the plan. And the hope and the dream and who knows? I'm very good at deadlines. That's the weird thing, by the way. I'm exceptionally good with deadlines, because it's just how you become professional. And I have respect for deadlines. I appreciate them, and I always, work with them. I always work last second, though. I have entirely too much faith in my own ability, and that's always been a problem. Even with the a brief beginner's guide to Pakistan radio series that I did for BBC, I worked very last second on those as well. I just had it in my head for months and months and months until I finally just sat down and put it down on paper one day. So I think I'm hoping that works here. If not, I'm going to be looking like a fool on stage. Back in Perth, which I'm not ready to go back to Perth. I really not. It's too soon. I just left WA, and it's hot there. It's hot as a motherfucker. Melbourne gets hot, and then, like, one day it's hot, and the next day it's fantastically cold. And you guys know I love grey weather and like it rainy and stuff. So Melbourne's for me is ideal. And instead, I'm gonna have to go back to sunny, bright, shiny Perth, where everyone is beautiful and tall and angular. and pudgy, squidgy, misshapen me comes rumbling along, and makes a fool of himself. So, yeah, not looking forward to that. But it is what it is, my friends. It is what it is. As always, you guys can find me at www.samisha.com. That's Samisha. And by the way, the website is new and redesigned, and you should check it out and give me your feedback. I'm really happy with what I've done with it, but I'd like to know what you guys think. So Samisha.com. And on the website, you can buy now not only my first stand-up comedy album, which I recorded when I came to Australia, which is Live at Noodle Palace. But my second stand-up comedy album, which is last year's stand-up comedy album called Live at Soba Stadium, which is something I'm also very proud of. Please check it out. Please buy that. I'd love you guys if you did. It's available on iTunes. It's available on Amazon. It's available through my website. Just get the digital copy. That'd be awesome. From next episode, I think the plugs are going to come up top, by the way. And I'm really sorry. I apologize for the crass commercialism. But, daddy's got to get paid. Daddy does need to eat. So that's going to happen. www.samisha.com, facebook.com/samisha.fans, so samisha.fans, twitter.com/samisha, or at samisha, samisha. I'm also on Instagram now, and instagram.com/samisha.com, actually, samisha.com is how I've done that one. And you can always email me at samisha@gmail.com. That's samisha@gmail.com. I love you guys. Stay safe. Stay brave, stay strong. My name is Sammy Shah. This has been Sammy Says.